You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Ghent altarpiece has been one of the most stolen artworks throughout history, and over the course of its long history, it's been coveted by some of the world's most powerful and notorious figures. Noah Charney tells that story in Stealing the Mystic Lamb, the true story of the world's most coveted masterpiece, published by Public Affairs. I'm very pleased that it brings Noah Charney, the director of the Association for Research into Crimes Against Art, to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
When did churches start acquiring altarpieces, and what role did they play?
Well, the role of the altarpiece was as a center point for meditation. It was a way to decorate churches, but it was also a point of departure for meditants who would likely as not understand the Latin of a church mass. They wouldn't be literate, so they wouldn't be able to read anything. So you get works like stained glass rising in the early part of the Middle Ages, and altarpieces as well as something for them to look at, essentially when they're maybe spacing out in the midst of an intense Latin mass.
So they would always be in the center of the church?
They would be above the altar in a church, but there would usually be one over the high altar, and then also there are altars in lateral ancillary chapels around the nave. And so you'd get altarpieces. You might have 20 in one church, each one a mini masterpiece.
But the Ghent altarpiece was meant to be the major one in that church.
Well, it's an interesting story. In fact, in the Cathedral of St. Bavo, it was not meant to be on the high altar. It was commissioned by a fellow called Jos Veit, who was a knight and an alderman of the city of Ghent. But he was not a member of the ruling class. He was not in the entourage of the Duke of Burgundy. And it was painted for his private family chapel, which is an ancillary chapel. So the star attraction of the cathedral was actually a private commission, not on the center stage.
And the patron appears in the painting as they did in many of these pieces.
He does. Jos Veit and his wife, Elizabeth Borlut, are shown on the outside of the altarpiece when the altarpiece is closed. And this was a way to both commemorate the fact that they paid for this magnificent work of art, and it was a way of essentially paying their way and the fast track into heaven through indulgences.
You said when it's closed. How are these altarpieces structured?
Well, it depends. In this case, we have a monumental triptych. So it's three sections. It has built on a massive hinged framework. The altarpiece is 14.5 by 11.5 feet. That's the size of a barn door. It weighs around 3 tons.
That's huge.
And it consists of 12 painted oaken panels placed together in this elaborate framework. And when it's closed, as it would be on weekdays, you can see the donors, and it would have been opened on Sundays and holidays.
Isn't it one of the earliest oil paintings ever?
It is. It is not the first oil painting, but it is the first monumental oil painting, the first famous one. And it's particularly important for a number of reasons. Art historians love to spout superlatives and firsts, the best to the first. And the Ghent altarpiece is a number of firsts. It is the first monumental oil painting that essentially established the preferred medium for painters for the next 500 years. And when it was finished, it became a point of pilgrimage for artists and intellectuals throughout Europe.
Now, Masaccio was the first painter of the real Renaissance, because he's the first painter to use one-point perspective. And everything that follows seems to start with him, and I think he died 1427. Where does this fit into that time frame?
Well, there's essentially two continua in this case. Masaccio, certainly in Italy. Giotto is often considered the forefather of the Renaissance. It depends which professor of art history you ask.
But Jan van Eyck wouldn't have known Giotto, would he?
No, although it's entirely possible and suggestive that Jan van Eyck actually may have traveled to Florence. We know that he went on a number of what's referred to as secret missions on behalf of Duke Philip the Good of Burgundy, making him one among a number of artists who were both secret agents and spies as well as artists. And there's a suggestion that he was in Florence, in which case he would have seen Masaccio paintings as well. Masaccio was primarily working in fresco. He was an artist painting in egg-based tempera, and Van Eyck's particular claim to fame as this sort of fulcrum between medieval Gothic painting in Northern Europe and the Renaissance was his use of these oil-based paints.
Which allowed him to go into incredible detail.
Absolutely incredible detail. He used brushes that were often as small as one or two badger hairs. And it also allows for more subtlety, because egg tempera paint is opaque, so one layer essentially blots out the layer beneath, whereas oil paints, layer upon layer, builds levels of subtlety that you can see through, and allows him this level of precision that is considered a forecast to realism.
He's painting on wood. Would that be less stable than if he had done it on canvas?
The wood is actually more stable. The canvas has a tendency to expand and contract based on the movement of the wooden support, but it is also more of a fragile material. With this heavy oak panel, it does expand and contract with humidity, but it's really built to last.
The altarpiece depicts the tale of the adoration of the mystic lamb. What's that story?
Well, there's a very complex iconography to the Ghent altarpiece, full of disguised symbolism. When it's closed, it depicts an annunciation scene where Gabriel comes to tell Mary that she will carry the Son of God. When it's open, the central panel is called Adoration of the Mystic Lamb, which is essentially a large scene of a heavenly landscape idealized in which saints and martyrs and hermits and bishops are all parading to pay homage to this lamb whose blood is being shed into a cup, the Holy Grail, and that lamb is, of course, an allegory for Christ himself. It combines all sorts of allegorical concepts, a lot of Catholic mysticism, into a sort of patchwork of Catholic ideology at the time.
Was Van Eyck a famous artist when he painted this?
He was already a well-established artist.
So he was painting in tempera pretty much until he switched over to oils. Was it just invented around this time?
Well, no, actually, it was a popular misconception that Jan van Eyck invented oil paint based on a story that Vasari tells. In fact, as early as the 11th century, there's a monastic manuscript that describes mixing pigments with linseed and nut oil. So oil paint predates this. There is also another relatively important painting called the Norfolk Triptych, which is about two decades younger than the Ghent altarpiece, that it is both in tempera and oil paints. So Jan van Eyck was painting in oils before then, but this was his first great work that put him on the international scene.
Was Ghent an important place at the time?
It was. It may surprise people to learn that it was, in fact, the second largest city in Europe at the time. It had a population of around 60,000 people. It was absolutely huge and a major industrial center.
Would an altarpiece have been considered a work of art or a work of just a religious artifact at the time?
Well, it's a good question. An altarpiece was considered a work of art, but until Van Eyck came around, painters were not considered of a particularly higher class or a sense of the sense that they're the aristocrats of the art world that we consider them today. They would have been considered in the same breath as a really great shoemaker or cabinet maker. But Jan van Eyck, as an important courtier, assistant to the Duke of Burgundy, as a secret agent, as a confidant of the Duke, as well as a painter, he helped to elevate the status of painters around Europe.
My guest is Noah Charney, who's written a book called Stealing the Mystic Lamb, The True Story of the World's Most Coveted Masterpiece. It is published by Public Affairs. So here we have this painting. It's a magnificent painting. It also is of historic significance because it's the first large oil painting. It represents the transition from medieval art into whatever the modern art tradition that continues until this day, at least in the North, and winds up being very influential because the Italian artists wind up also painting in oil paints. But none of this explains why this painting, which weighed, you said, tons, was stolen again and again. Or was it pieces of the painting that was stolen?
Well, it's quite staggering. It was involved in 13 different crimes as the subject of 13 different crimes over 600 years, including having been stolen on 7 separate occasions.
Often during wartime.
Often during war. It was unfortunately in the path of battles between European powers that had nothing to do with the territory of Flanders, between Alsace and Flanders. Many world wars have passed over that territory, and the Ghent altarpiece wound up as the fraying rope in a tug of war between France and Germany, between Napoleon and the powers that were confronting him during the Second World War. And the Ghent altarpiece was stolen in all of those wars.
But Hitler also wanted it.
Hitler actually wanted it. It was perhaps the number one work that he wanted. And the reason was twofold. On the one hand, it is, of course, one of the most important paintings in history. It was also a painting by a Teutonic artist, so it was particularly popular with him. But also, it was one of only a few works of art that were forcibly returned from Germany after the First World War and the Treaty of Versailles. And he wanted it to reverse the humiliation of the German loss of the First World War. And by seizing it, he would reverse that. That was what he had in mind.
It disappeared a few times simply because it was hidden to prevent it from being stolen.
Yes, there's...
People thought it was stolen.
Yeah, there's a tremendous story with the First World War where the local canon, who's an amateur archaeologist and historian, essentially single-handedly prevented the Germans during the First World War from capturing it.
Part of the problem with these with altarpieces is that they had panels, predellas, that were easily separated. And even today, sometimes a museum will put together a show in which they gather together the triptych or whatever that was the centerpiece, and then the various predellas, usually missing two or three anyway because they just can't get somebody to lend it to them. They've been dispersed all over the world.
Yes, and it's a problem with this painting as well. There was a predella, which I always describe to my students. It looks a bit like a comic strip that runs along the bottom of an altarpiece.
And it tells the story that's related to the centerpiece.
Exactly. Usually incidents from the life of the saints depicted in it. And this was lost as early as the 15th century when there was a botched restoration attempt by a Renaissance painter. And it was so badly botched that they wound up discarding the predella altogether. We also don't have the original framework of the Ghent altarpiece.
What is the judges panel and what's the journey that it took?
Well, the righteous judges panel located in the bottom left when the altarpiece is open was stolen in 1934 in perhaps the most bizarre and intricate of the many thefts. It was stolen ostensibly in retaliation at having been taken from Germany in the Treaty of Versailles. At least that was what the note left at the crime scene said. It seems to have been a red herring. And there are all sorts of theories about the motivation. My favorite one is that this panel was stolen because the Ghent altarpiece contains a coded treasure map leading to the Arma Christi, or the implements used at Christ's Passion, which Hitler wanted to change the course of the war. That's my favorite conspiracy theory. There are other theories.
But I like that. Does Dan Brown know about this?
I think he would love it.
The Ghent altarpiece code.
I think it's absolutely it would fit in with what he was interested in. And Hitler, of course, was a passionate believer in the occult and the supernatural. So it is plausible historically.
Isn't it unclear as to whether the one that's there is the original one?
Well, that's a lingering mystery. During the Second World War, a Belgian conservator painted an exact copy of the Righteous Judges panel because the police had given up and they declared that the altarpiece was the panel from the altarpiece was still missing. This panel was installed in 1950, but the punchline to the story is in 1974, a conservator whose job every year was to clean the Ghent altarpiece suddenly showed up for work and did a double take. Because within the last year, this one panel seemed to have aged by about 500 years, and he thought that the stolen original had been replaced. Mm-hmm. And it is still a question. Some people believe that the stolen panel was painted over and surreptitiously reinserted into the altarpiece. And hopefully this will actually be answered in the coming months. The Getty Conservation Institute is currently cleaning the Ghent altarpiece. They're doing a complete restoration. And when they publish their findings, we should at least have the answer to this mystery.
Now, how will this restoration be different from previous restorations? Haven't there been some restorations fairly recently?
It's actually been decades since it's been properly restored. It's cleaned and checked every year. But we have new technology that is absolutely astounding. And between x-rays, through the sort of chemical analyses that we can do, it's at a much higher level now. And this will be the first thorough conservation and study that's taken place in decades.
So we'll find out whether the Ghent altarpiece, at least what we have of it, is the real thing.
Yes, and with any luck, I'll have to write a second edition in the coming months.
Now, how much of the book is, how much of the painting is altogether again? And is it in Ghent?
It is in Ghent. It is in the Church of St. Bavo. It's in a new chapel, which is easier to protect. But 11/12 of the altarpiece is still intact in its original form.
Well, that's pretty good compared to some.
It is. Its survival is particularly incredible considering how many times it was very nearly destroyed, how many times it was smuggled, stolen, shipped, stored in castles and secret salt mines. The fact that it survives intact is particularly miraculous.
Noah Charney has also written The Art Thief, which was a bestseller. He is the founder of and founding director of the Association for Research into Crimes Against Art, which is a nonprofit think tank. He's written for many different publications and appeared on NPR. And one of the things I find most amusing is he has named his dog Hubert Van Eyck.
My wife is very patient with me, and she allowed me to name our puppy, which I got for my birthday last year, Hubert van Eyck, after the brother of Jan van Eyck, who's a mysterious character in his own right. He's called the most famous painter who may have never actually painted anything.
He is given credit on quite a few works of art.
Well, he actually, there's not a single extant work that is definitively attributed to him. But what happened was in 1823, after a series of thefts that resulted in the wing panels of the Ghent altarpiece ending up at the Kaiser Friedrich Museum in Berlin, they were cleaned and a 16th century inscription was revealed. And that inscription said that this painting was begun by Hubert van Eyck, who was the first in art, and finished by his brother Jan. And this was the first that anyone had ever heard of Hubert van Eyck. And it absolutely rocked the art world. The equivalent might be if the Sistine Chapel was cleaned and a note was found saying this was painted by Michelangelo and Larry Buonarroti. It absolutely sent shockwaves through the art world. And people started to look for works that they could attribute to this mysterious Hubert van Eyck. And there's still not one to this day that's definitively so.
Well, we can check out what the dog can paint. Noah Charney's book, Stealing the Mystic Lamb, The True Story of the World's Most Coveted Masterpiece, published by Public Affairs. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.